Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. So we are back with Steve Weinberg, who is a former attorney who left his job at a Philadelphia law firm at the age of 28 to teach English to underprivileged communities in Israel. During this time, he published two books, and then he spent another 3 years in Israel and got a master's degree in literature from Ben-Gurion University, where he became fluent in Hebrew. He is now completing his doctorate at Rutgers University in the field of German literature, where he also teaches German to undergraduates. He's taught himself German over the last 5 years, and he's given presentations of his academic research into Jewish-German literature, especially the fiction of Franz Kafka, at many prestigious universities, most notably Harvard. And he's currently writing a book on his travels in Germany called A Jew is Back in Germany, as well as a book on Nietzsche's controversial views on women entitled Nietzsche's Guide to Dating. He's in the process of learning Russian and will be lecturing on Kafka and Jewish humor this December in Moscow. And he is also my first cousin, so I've known him since he was in diapers. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Robbie. Cousin.
Good to have you on
Thank
the show,
you for
man.
That intro.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about
Great
a lot
be
of
here.
For sure. I'm excited to talk to you because you've got so much interesting just life knowledge on a lot of different areas that I think will converge into a really interesting discussion. I mean, for one, you've done a lot of study on social skills, dating, of course, but you have your background in literature and some of these, very famous philosophers and writers. Also, you spend your calendar year, at least last year, in three different continents, being in Israel, Europe, and the U.S. So tell us your story. How did you kind of take this crazy path? Like, how did you end up going from law to, German literature to Nietzsche? Because you have a pretty interesting story.
I get asked this question a lot. And I always try to, find the most exciting way to answer it. Hopefully it will speak for itself. But, I was working in a law firm, and I think you had a similar experience where I had always been a student. I was undergrad and law school, and then when I got to the real world of having to go into the office every day, sort of long hours, I just felt like my quality of life, when it was supposed to be at its highest, because you're making money and this is what you work toward, I felt like my quality of life had just totally plummeted. I was happier as kind of a poor student than making a lot of money as an attorney. I just was trying to figure out ways to get out. And I would get this newsletter in my email every week for Jewish events going on in Philadelphia. And I saw every week there'd be this ad at the bottom that said, teach in Israel for a year. And I kind of always just kind of deleted the email. And then
was that from Birthright Marketing that we went on?
Yeah, that type of stuff.
Trip?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I was just doing it to meet people in Philly. But for me, that's just an interesting part of the story because sometimes these newsletters, actually they can change your life, these email newsletters. Now, maybe we'll talk later about, because my big theme is also spending as little time on the internet as possible and sort of having a minimalist, view of internet life. But anyway, so I went to Israel and I went from living in, really nice apartment in Philadelphia to living in sharing a small apartment, pretty sort of I wouldn't say intolerable conditions, but worse than like your freshman dorm experience, and kind of worked my way up from there. I was living with two other guys, and you know, I take pride in that time because I was just sort of starting from scratch, you know. And
what was it like leaving that, you know, job behind? I know for our family anyways, it was kind of a shocker because you're obviously in school for a long time, passed the bar, became a lawyer, and then it's like, eh, not really feeling it. Gonna, you know, head out to the desert in Israel because you weren't even in Tel Aviv.
Well, I know you witnessed a lot of it. It was not like an easy decision to make. And I had so many people basically pressuring me, threatening me perhaps not to go to Israel. And somehow, you know, I managed to block out all the noise and to go. And I think I sort of came to the conclusion around this time that I had always like sort of trusted the advice of others, especially elders, especially my parents, as like they know what's best for me, they have the best interest for me. And then this whole experience like taught me to listen to myself and like to be very, very skeptical of the advice you get from your parents.
I
never had that skepticism before, you know?
I mean, I think that's kind of like, you know, we all develop that at some point or another. Some of us, you know, later, some of us earlier. Depends also on how, you know, how pressuring your parents are of your choices. My parents have always been totally kind of chill, and I've had some wacky jobs.
We'll talk about that.
That's
so interesting.
Yeah, you know, they've always been very supportive of my crazy, oh, I'm a professional poker player. Oh, you know, the professional golfer, that didn't work out. Work at a hedge fund, that didn't work out. Oh, now I'm a dating coach. You know, that's but I've had other people in my life who have been more of the, you know, friends who have been a lot more critical of, you know, some of the choices I've made. And it's very tough to go against that pressure, you know, and I don't care what people think. I am going to do what's best for me, and to follow that, you know, to trust yourself. That's one of the hardest things because everyone wants to be liked and everyone wants to get validation. So to say, fuck the validation, I'm going to do what I think I need to do, I think is a huge part. It's a very masculine trait, or it's a very masculine action. And obviously I think you're a lot happier doing with that decision, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm always trying. It's always hard to sort of say things or do things that you know is going to piss people off. But like ultimately, that's usually the best decision. And if I can give you a compliment, I definitely, you know, look up to you in that regard. Like as to, you know, you have a certain, you've obviously broken the social mold in many ways. And I always think, well, Robbie did it, you know, I can do this too.
I love it.
Like, yeah. And, you know, our family too, it's a lot of this kind of pressure to get a stable job and get married. And
yeah, we come from a very traditional family, you know, no divorces. I think that's one of the things that's driven me kind of almost in a weird way into this weird profession, because we come from like both my mom's side and my dad's side, they're one of three kids, never any divorces. So I think it kind of got burned into my brain at a young age, like divorce is like, who would ever get divorced? So I've been very choosy on like before diving into relationships and, you know, wanting to make sure whoever I do eventually, you know, marry, if I go down that road, better not screw that one up. And
Well, I can also tell you, having studied law, that getting divorced is like, it's just disaster from a legal perspective, purely from a legal perspective, let alone the emotional.
Oh yeah. the emotional, it's got to be worse. I mean, I've gone through many breakups that are pretty bad, but thank God having had the government involved in my love affairs.
Well, the law treats marriage as so sacred, like you're basically one person under the law. So to kind of legally separate that, it's just, you know, the law was really not written with divorce in mind, you know. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
So let's go back more to, you know, so now you're in Israel. And then what happened after that?
So, like, I always, Israel, just the experience of being in Israel really inspired me to just break free of all of these pressures from my past. Something about Israel in general, it's like a young country. There's sort of an entrepreneurial spirit there. Everyone's kind of finding creative ways to thrive. So even after my first year of teaching, there was this expectation that I would come back and go back to being a lawyer. Like, I kind of sold it to my parents. It's like, I'm just doing it for a year as a break. And the whole process repeated itself where I was deciding, should I go back to Israel and make Aliyah, like become a citizen? So I had the whole kind of process repeated itself. I actually had a new girlfriend now that was trying to, the first time I had a girlfriend that wanted me to stay in the U.S. Then I had a new girlfriend that wanted me to stay in the U.S. But this time it was a lot easier to just say, I'm going to do what's best for me. And yeah, then I basically said, you know, I'm just going to, I was like totally feeling rebellious, feeling liberated. And my real passion, like my real kind of gift is this, is writing and sort of, I would say, philosophy. And I started a master's program in literature with a professor who is an expert in the writing literature of Franz Kafka. Even though this was in Israel, this was a Kafka wrote in German. So I was working with a professor on German literature in Israel. I was living, I like did the whole process so impressively with making Aliyah. Somehow I found a way to get my tuition paid for by the government. I was living in a house with other Israeli students, doing volunteer work in the community and not paying any rent. And I was getting money from having made Aliyah. I was getting, you know, Aliyah is becoming citizen for, I'm sure not everyone listening knows what that is. And I was getting, you know, government payments.
Maybe not. So explain, it's getting your citizenship in Israel.
Yeah. So,
and if you're Jewish, you can basically do that as a birthright, correct? You have to go through the process.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a very easy process.
Okay. So they pay you money to do this, huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they give you a one-way flight, free flight. And then they give you a payment of about $600 or $700 a month just as a kind of supplementary income for the first, I believe, 7 months. Free health care, you know, other benefits.
Wow.
Free Hebrew lessons.
You know, you don't have to join the army.
At my age, I was too old at 29 at that point. Mm-hmm. But if you're younger, you have to. You know, if you're between 18 and 24, you'll have to join the army.
Okay.
But I actually wish I had had that experience of joining the army. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like they throw you on the front lines. It's like a lot of army work is now just working in offices, like working with technology, translation.
Right. Well, Israel's defense forces are so high tech anyways, there's probably not a ton of, you know, ground combat stuff going on. At least, well, in hindsight,
no,
obviously, we know that there hasn't been a lot, but in, if it was crazy times of war, sure. But anyway, so then how did you make the transition to Rutgers and then to Germany? Was that all encompassed in the master's program? A PhD program that you're working on?
Right. So I sort of kind of figured out that I wanted to become a professor or at least some kind of writer.
Oh, wait, back up. I wanted to ask you more about the hacking the system in Israel, actually, because people might be curious about that. So just to get this straight, because I mean, you know, that's my like, you know, kind of a geek out on that stuff. I use Airbnb to supplement my rent, and I love, you know, ways to avoid paying, you know, rent, taxes, whatever I can, you know. So you're getting $600 or $700 a month from the government. They're supplementing. You're also getting money from the program you're in. Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. And I wasn't paying rent, but I mean, I was doing volunteer work in the community, but
you're doing something you enjoy.
Deal. Yeah. And I was living with Israelis, so I was like immersing myself in Israeli culture and Hebrew.
And obviously, you know, having fun, dating there.
Yeah.
Enjoying the social life there more so than Philadelphia, I'm guessing.
Way more, yes. Yeah, for sure.
So you're going from a job you hate, you know, that's sucking the life out of you, paying a shitload of expensive rent in a big U.S. city, probably.
Right.
You know, working crazy hours, maybe you're saving a few bucks, but your quality of life is shit. So now you're probably saving more money every month and doing something you like, and you have a better social life.
Yeah, that's a really important point.
And learning a new language.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like my life now and then was like what people work like the entire year for to get a 2-week vacation to do, right?
Yeah. always on vacation.
So, I mean, or maybe just like, you know, I used to joke that I was like, you know, retired. Like I had worked for 2 years in law and now I'm retired because now I'm learning. This is what I do, what people do when they're retired, learning languages, learning, reading literature, traveling, you know, having a lot of free, like choosing my own schedule, making my own schedule. But yeah, so.
You know, it's so cool that because there's so many people who want that in the US and they think they can't have it or they're too scared to try it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just a couple dummies that like, whatever, I'm going to move to Europe. If I move to Kiev, why not? I'll start some silly business. Like, I really think the powers that be or however you want to say it will reward you for taking those risks, especially if you're smart about it and you figure out ways to hack the system. It's so easy to like get out of that miserable American rat race that I think a lot of people get stuck in. I was stuck in it for 2.5-3 years. And, you know, when you move abroad, you don't get taxed on your first $100,000 of personal income right off the bat. If you're making 100K, you're saving 30 grand, you know, like that's a total game changer. And then there, like you said, there's all sorts of programs when you move to a different country. If you take some classes, if you learn some languages, you can get citizenships, which allow you for extra visas. We can travel to foreign countries a lot easier, meet cool people, just, you know, have these really interesting experiences. And the other thing I harp on all the time is when you're traveling and you meet Americans in those foreign places, they're usually pretty cool people who are also interesting and you can form some really great friendships that way. So, you know, I'll get off my high horse, but that's the, I love it.
I think like for me, something about growing up in America and especially in our demographic is like, we just have these certain structures that we assume are ingrained in us that this is the way you're supposed to live. And like, there's this idea that if you want to have a successful, like prosperous life, you just have to like work really hard. This is like an American ethos, like no pain, no gain. Like this kind of, it's all about whoever works the hardest, gets the biggest prize. And obviously I believe strongly in the value of hard work, but like sometimes there are just like loopholes, right? Not like in a sneaky way, but like you live in Kiev and you can just for a variety of reasons, the cost of living is just way lower. You have a much more kind of affluent lifestyle than kind of like just breaking your back and in the States, you know.
Just alone without the income tax, right? I'm saving that, you know, $30K per year, and my cost of living is half. So if I was, you know, I can live like a king in Kiev for like $3,000 a month. Whereas in the US, that's going to cost $6,000 to $10,000 in, you know, LA, New York, San Francisco, you know, obviously more in San Francisco or New York. So I'm saving, you know, I'm saving a significant, I'm saving like a house, a down payment on a house every year by living in a place that's more fun to live. So it's not a bad deal to have this, a better social life and a better lifestyle. Now, at some point I may move back to the US because I love the US too, but I think it, like, geo hacking, especially if you want to, if you do have a situation where you can live abroad, I think guys are just kind of scared to do it because they've got all these questions and it just kind of seems like this thing that they want to do, but they don't really know how to get started. And I didn't really know what the hell I was doing either. You just kind of, you just go and you figure out how to stay. That's one way to do it. That's how I did it. So I don't know if you have any advice on that.
Well, I mean, okay, let me think. Like,
I mean, not that I think better, actually, I think this kind of ties into what you're saying a bit. Now that you're, you know, now that you don't have that structure in place, I know you're a total stickler on like time management, which is great. That's something I struggle with a lot because being an entrepreneur and not really, you know, I don't answer to anyone except myself. Obviously, I answer to my clients and my, you know, my viewers and readership, but it's not an immediate, you know, there's no one breathing down my neck, right? If I don't perform, I don't see the repercussions of that until 3, 6, 9 months, a year out versus immediate negative impacts when you're at a job. When you're underperforming, you might get fired or your boss might yell at you, versus if you're an entrepreneur, no one's going to yell at you. No one's going to fire you, but 3 months from now, you might end up totally broke and not sure how to pay the bills. So scheduling even like out my days was kind of a challenge for a long time, especially when I was nomadic and traveling all over the place. You know, that totally screws up any sort of being able to schedule meetings. And so tell us your kind of theory around this, or give us all the time stuff. A wizard with
well,
this.
I'm like, this is a question I'm fascinated about, that I could talk for hours about. But, well, first, you know, when I started from scratch, let's say, like, I realized that everything has to come from me in terms of I'm my own boss. So I didn't have to be at work at a certain time. And I quickly realized that this was like was a gift and a curse, because time can be so easily squandered when you don't have someone, you know, forcing you to do something. So I basically realized I have to force myself to meet deadlines or to do things every day, do things at a certain time. People will be very careful with money, with how they spend money, with budgeting money, let's say. But then with time, they're completely often reckless, I would say. They don't have an awareness of where their time gets wasted. They don't track their time. They engage in activities that suck up their time. And I try my best to be very aware of time, because as one of my favorite philosophers, Ben Franklin, said, lost time is never found again. I would just recommend anyone listening, if you want to improve your life or become more productive, be more content, you should really read the quotes of Ben Franklin. Like, he is so wise about all of these issues we're talking about in his own way. And they're very, you know, humorous, easy to read quotes. Yeah.
I remember you quoted one of his, on Idle Conversation. Do you remember that one? Almost positive you told me. I can try. You'll probably do a better job if you remember, though.
I don't remember. I mean, he has one about, like, even the best, you can talk too long on the best of subjects. Probably not what you're thinking of.
I don't remember the exact words, but it's basically like he tried to eliminate just the day-to-day mundane, you know, small talk conversations from his life.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah. He was saying like, all right, I don't have time to just like chat with my friends about this or that or the other when I could be doing something a lot more productive. And maybe it was him, maybe it wasn't, whatever. But the point was, I realized at the time I was spending a lot of time having like WhatsApp chats.
Maybe that was me.
Maybe. I had these like ongoing WhatsApp chats with a few different people. One of them was a guest on this podcast. I won't name names, but he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And we'd like literally spend maybe an hour every day on like WhatsApp texting about different parties we were at or different things. It was some sort of business context to it because he's got a similar job that I do. But I know there's a huge thing when it comes to time management and focus. Like anytime you're focused on an activity and you stop that focus and you check your phone, you know, it'll take you, they say, like 15 minutes to regain that focus and get back into a flow state necessary to really get deep work done. I think that's from Cal Newport's work, Deep Work book.
For me, like, look, the phone, I could spend hours talking about the phone. I have a whole, like, list of rules that I place on myself to limit my time on the phone.
What are those? Give us these rules.
Well, let me just, before I say, just, like, because I see the phone is if it's not used, you know, in a productive way, mindfully and thoughtfully, it will just, it's like a plague on your life. It's like a disease on your life. And I was talking about, well, I even think of it like, to use an extreme analogy, are you familiar with the Black Death in Europe in 1348?
Yeah,
it was like a third of Europe's population died from this horrible disease. But actually, about 50 years later, the people that survived had a very like huge increase in quality of life and prosperity because now there was not as many people to compete with. You know, more land, more wealth, more resources. I almost feel like for those that are, you know, this is an incredible opportunity for those people who are not addicted to their phones to just like run circles around the people that are, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. Totally, man.
Because people are just like,
it's the black screen death.
Yeah, like your competition is just being sort of totally incapacitated. So it's a great time if you want to get ahead. Don't use your phone.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Social media, especially.
I can't believe how many people download this podcast. You know, it's crazy because it's not like I'm doing any marketing. It's not the type of subject where people are going to go, hey, you got to check out this podcast because there's a little bit of a, you know, the dating aspect of it could be potentially embarrassing. I don't know. But there's just a lot of fucking people out there sitting on, yeah, on iTunes and YouTube, just doing nothing but devouring content, which is awesome. Like I don't want to.
Yeah, but this podcast helps them, hopefully.
But my point is, I'm not doing any marketing. I'm not like pushing this out. And there's so many people on their phones consuming content, typically in a state of. I don't know if it's yin or yang, but one energy is like a putting out energy with the other energy is putting in. And they say you should spend more time putting energy, you know, out into the world than you should be consuming it. Because obviously if the more you consume, the fatter you get, the lazier you get, the, you know, your life tends to go like this versus expand when you're putting value out there. So.
Well, the phone, again, can be an amazing device if you're using it the right way. Like, I would not have been able to learn Hebrew or German if I didn't have a smartphone, because I'm constantly walking around listening to, like, audio courses and, you know, doing yoga in German through internet. But, like, obviously other parts of the phone are just black holes, right? Like, especially, I'll just use Instagram as an example. Like, I use Instagram for myself because I want to, you know, just show people what I'm doing and, like, save my pictures, whatever. It's sure partially an ego thing. But then I look at all the stories people post. I look at when I post a story, how many people watch it. I'm like, why would you watch my story, you know? Like, I never watch. Like, every day there's, like, hundreds of stories posted. I never look at any of them. Like, I don't care what, maybe once in a while. I'm just like, I think about how much time these people are wasting, like, recording the story, then looking at other people's stories, liking the stories, commenting on them, running back.
That's incredibly, like, addictive.
I mean, it's such a waste of time.
They've engineered all of this stuff to be just like a Vegas slot machine. You know, you're getting a hit of dopamine every time that you go to the next story. It's designed perfectly to keep you watching. And I mean, I can speak from experience. I used to spend around 2 hours a day on Instagram. And now I can check in my settings to see exactly how much time I spend. And I used to post a lot of stories and watch a lot of stories. And
yeah.
I don't really miss it at all. I mean, I might have picked up some clients here and there, but for the most part.
It's so boring. The stories are so boring. It's just like them walking around some city and like, or like a.
Yeah, most stories are terribly boring. So here we go. Here. Daily average, 21 minutes. It might be backwards in the camera, but.
It's great. No, it's not backwards.
Yeah.
All right. So let me tell you my phone rules because I wanted to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, please.
Okay. The first thing is I only check my phone from 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. I think that, like, if businesses are open from 10, you know, they have set hours that they're open. So for me, it's the same thing. Like, I close, I open. I'm not 24/7 business, you know? And second, I only allow myself, this is only, again, this is only for social media and messages. So, like, my whole system of productivity works on, well, okay, I allow myself 30 minutes a day for checking messages.
And that's obviously not in a, that'll happen a couple of minutes here and there throughout the day, right? So you do your best to police yourself on that?
Yeah, and again, usually it's, this doesn't count for like work emails and things that are important, but I'm talking about like dating apps or Instagram, Facebook, this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I have to meditate for at least 1 minute before and after I check. So that way I go into the message like an event. I'm not just like mindlessly checking. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you can't meditate, you know, if you're just waiting in line, you can't meditate. You can't check. You have to actually be sitting and checking. Like, it's almost like sitting down to a meal.
What do you do when you're waiting in line? Because
why do you want to waiting in line?
Yeah.
See, what's amazing is that this time that most people, when they don't have time to fill, they'll just check their messages. And that time could be used. Like, I think, you know, what about all the other apps on my phone that I could check that might have like fascinating, you know, I could like read an article, or I could do flashcards in a foreign language. I try to carry a book with me or something like that.
Okay, so you might be on your phone, but you're not on social media.
Yeah, again, I don't mean, I use the word the phone, but like I said before, the phone, if it, you know, for certain situations, it's extremely valuable.
Sure.
Like, incredible, incredible device. But the Facebook, social media stuff, dating apps, you know, like news. I have a lot of issues with checking the news as well. Yeah.
I got you.
So But, you know, I allow myself like once a week where I just give myself 30 minutes to use like whenever I want, anytime, like a free 30 minutes. And then if I go over the limit and I want an extra 30 minutes, I have to do 200 push-ups and or squats.
I love it.
And I have to earn it, earn the extra time.
Mm-hmm. Before you check it?
Before I get the extra 30 minutes.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, you have to ask yourself, is it really worth it? Is it really that important? Sometimes it is, right? I'll do the push-ups and the squats. So I really need to
That can take a little while. It would take me probably at least 10 minutes, 20 minutes to do the push-ups.
Yeah. And usually what happens is you're like, you know what? I can just wait till tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, it's not that important. The message is it's so easy to check. Like, first of all, I don't get any notifications on my phone. But for people that are not aware, it's just click of a button. You can just check. So, but imagine if you had barriers, right?
So one thing I've done, which it sounds like you've done, is I've eliminated almost all the badge, the badges that pop up on my phone.
I get no notifications at all.
Like right now, I only have two, and those are from right here on Facebook Messenger.
Oh, the red ones? Actually, I don't get those. Yeah. I don't get those either. Yeah. I have those eliminated.
Well, I turned them off on most, because what happens is I would be obsessed with clearing them. I'd be like, oh, I got a badge there. So I have to I'd get this dopamine hit to get rid of it. And it was a lot of time I was doing something completely stupid, like going on a banking app, and there was a message there and it said, oh, you need to update your address. Like, why the fuck do I need to update my address? I don't even use this stupid app. Like, I don't even have a bank account there anymore. And I was, thinking in my head of how many minutes I was wasting every day clearing badge app icons. Like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's good to realize that.
So keep giving us more of these rules. What else? I like
so more rules about the phone. Well, I also have a lot of rules for just like daily tasks that I do, you know.
Anything else phone related? Or I guess they go hand in hand.
Phone related. So. I also try to keep track of how much time I spend on the phone or the computer in general. So if I'm doing something on the phone, I'll look at what time it is. And then I see how long I spend on it. And then I'll write down in my book. I have a little notebook where I keep all this stuff, how much time I spend. I mean, sometimes I forget to do it, but again, it's like.
The phone will track that stuff too, but that's another thing you could end up obsessing over.
Well, it's like a way of, it's kind of like writing down calories, right? It's like, I see food and time like very similar actually in this way. If you're tracking what you eat, whenever you track, it just makes you more aware of time you're wasting, or, you know, so I just try to track that. But yeah, I could get an app too. I always like skeptical.
It comes stock on the phone. You can check your screen time. It comes stock on your phone. You can see how much time you're spending. You just go to like settings and screen time. And it'll tell you all this shit. So screen time right here. Settings.
Yeah.
Screen time.
Yeah.
You know, daily average for me is 6 hours. So, I don't know.
It also just helps. Like, I have this book here.
Uh-huh.
This is like my personal, like, law book. You know, we have laws in society to keep society running smoothly. We just have laws everywhere, except we don't have laws for ourselves usually. And that's where we need rules the most, to keep our own lives running smoothly and productively.
So tell us some laws.
I have this book. I mean, I have like a whole section about the phone. I think I told you most of it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I also should say, like, let's say I'm meeting somebody for, you know, for coffee. Like, and they don't show up. Like, I'll check my phone. I feel like if it's a necessity to check, then I'll just check, right? I'll only check that particular message.
Gotcha.
Like, for this call today, I checked before the call to make sure, like, you know, everything's in order. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you want to hear about other stuff?
Yeah. That I do? I like how you've woven, like, your background in law into learning language and all this stuff.
Law has helped me a lot, too, because when you're a lawyer, you have to time how long you work. That's how you get paid, is billing hours. So, like, it made me more aware of – actually, a lot of lawyers complain about it, but in a way it's nice because it keeps you from – it makes you more aware of how much time you're spending on something. And, like, so I sort of took that with me.
And you're getting paid for every minute you spend, so it's not like you're – you know. I mean, if you have a high billable hourly wage, it's great. If you have a low one, it probably sucks, but I guess that's part of the job.
Law firms have mastered how to make time valuable. Like, they want you to get in early, bill as much as you can. The only problem for me was, like, I didn't care about what I was doing, but if I can use that productivity for things I care about, it's, like, very powerful, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So yeah, other things, like, I realized that, you know, when I was living in Israel a few years ago, that I had all these different goals that I wanted to achieve. And, you know, every day I would wake up and I wanted to write, like, I wanted to learn Hebrew. I wanted to work on music. I wanted to, like, relax, meditate, all this stuff. And it was actually, like, overwhelming. I'm sure many people experience this, where they have so many things they want to do, they don't know in which direction to go.
Yeah.
So I created a system. I said, you know, I need, like, some kind of system where I'll sort of know what I'm doing every day. And I actually went through the alphabet, A to Z, and for each letter of the alphabet, I thought of a goal that I'm working towards. And then, so B stands for breathing, like meditating.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, and then I got a journal or a planner, and I would just write for every hour, I'm sorry, like every time I wanted to spend on meditating, I'd write letter D. And E was for exercise. I'd write E in, you know. Y was for yoga. Put that in. And basically it allowed me to very easily create a system and a schedule for me every day to, like, work toward these goals.
I'm a little confused how it works. You're not doing it for every letter. You're just doing some letters.
Maybe I'll show you.
Okay.
So this is, people look at this book and think I'm, like, some, like, mad scientist, but see, I have B was for breathing, 8 o'clock.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. You're tracking. It's got every day by the hour here.
Yeah.
It's a calendar.
W is working out. I went for a run this morning at 9.
Uh-huh.
D, you know, it's something to be created. That stands for depict. It's time I use for writing. And I have U in here at 12. And I actually have something for every letter in the alphabet.
What was between me? I see where it says R.
That's a dollar sign. That's just, like, time I'm trying to spend figuring out how to make money. How to, like, okay. I usually use it to figure out how to get scholarships, because that's a form of money. Yeah.
Got it. Can you scroll down a little bit more? Or, yeah, there you go. What do you have planned for the rest?
So I use it now for everything gets a symbol. This is a German flag. That's time I spend preparing for my German class that I teach. This is O, that stands for Oxford. That's time I spend working on academic articles. Like, one day it'll get me a job at Oxford, kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, I mean, it's a very personal, so it's sort of like, for me, I know it very well, but for other people, they'll be like, a bit, takes a little while to understand. Sure. T, it stands for truth. That's time I spend every night writing in my journal, writing the truth about my life.
Uh-huh.
This is a little plane. time I spend figuring out travel plans, like flights, where I want to go. This E is actually an E. It's actually epsilon. It's some Greek word that stands for pleasure or joy. I think it's eudaimonia. And that's time I just spend doing just something that makes me happy, like watching TV, like fantasy, preparing my fantasy team, anything that's just like pure leisure.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So
you do that. Some of it, you plan this ahead of time, or you go back through and you mark down so you have a record of what you were doing?
So every week, the start of the week, and for me, the start of the week is Sunday, I make the schedule for the week, you know? And I try to, there's certain things I do. Every morning I meditate. So every morning it's BBB every day. And then after that, it's usually working out and then writing. I try to, again, like having a routine. This allows you to have a routine.
BBB because you're doing 3 hours of meditation?
No.
Okay.
B for Sunday morning. B for Monday morning. B for Tuesday morning.
Okay.
And for me, breathing, I have a whole like list of what it has to be at least 15 minutes of meditating.
Okay.
I mean, I want this to be helpful for your listeners, so I don't expect them to totally mimic my system, but the takeaway points are that when you plan your schedule in advance, it forces you to make choices about, you can't do everything, and it forces you to make choices like, what is really important? What do I really have time for? Basically, it forces you to treat time like very seriously. It also allows you to know what you're doing, and you don't have to spend time, like you lose time making a schedule, obviously, but as Ben Franklin said, you know, every minute spent planning is an hour earned. You know?
Love it.
Yeah. And
I get a 60x return on my minute. Not a bad deal.
Yeah, I think so. Might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but and it also works on the compound effect theory that like doing something every day over time will produce like, I think, tremendous results. So I watch people like running around like chickens with their heads cut off. They want to meditate and they just like, oh yeah, I want to meditate today. But then they like have breakfast and then the day just goes by and then, oh, I'm too tired. Or they want to write. And it's sad actually.
Yeah.
And like writing it down, the act of writing it down, you know, you don't have to use my whole symbol system. I just like that because it's a way of easily writing things that I want to do. I happen to have like a lot of different goals.
I use a habit tracker, which I find to be really helpful. And it's, I'll show you guys what it is here. It's called a Habit Share. This one right there. Mm-hmm. And I've got different goals for different areas of my life.
Work out, learn Russian, meditate. Sounds just like me.
Mm-hmm. One for intermittent fasting.
Journal, nice.
Uh-huh.
Content creation, okay. I don't really have that, but equivalent. No hookah. Nice.
Trying to cut out the hookah because I've been smoking too much. But, you know, just the silly act of like putting the green dot gives me a hit of dopamine, or whatever the chemical is. And that's way more rewarding than, you know, checking a notification on social media. And knowing that if I don't put the silly little green dot in, I'm going to lose my streak. You know, I've had a 6-week streak on journaling, and I don't want to mess that up because then I lose my streak. So just a stupid little thing like a habit sharing app. Also, there's other people that are in the leverage group that I run, and I've got all of them. So I'm also tracking, you know, their names in there, and that way we can hold each other accountable. So it's a great little tool. I mean, yeah. Radically, I've been doing it for about a year, and I thought one of the hardest things I've ever had tried to do was learn a language, and I'm actually enjoying learning Russian. I mean, I still suck, but I feel like I'm making progress because I practice every day. And coming from, you know, you've learned, you're on your fourth language. Хорошо.
Do you want to ask me about languages?
Yeah. Well, first, is there anything left on time management? So the scheduling out, when you told me that you scheduled your entire week out before, hour by hour, that, you know, I thought that was, first I thought it was aggressive, you know, aggressively, whatever you want to call it. But then I was like, wow, that could be really valuable, especially for someone like me who I think I spend a lot of time just, yeah, what should I do now? Okay, this. Luckily,
terrible. Yeah.
Since I've been tracking, you know, when I don't know what I'm doing, I typically pick something that's valuable. Like I'll go exercise or I'll do something to mark off my list. But before that, I mean, I was spending so much time on Instagram and wasting time that, yeah, a total game changer. So I think some degree of planning my week would be very valuable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to always a balance, right? Like you don't want to be that guy that's just like, I brush my teeth at 10:22 PM and then it, you know,
sure.
I mean, and I think that maybe I've gone a little too far. But I just, yeah. Anyway, like
it's one of those things you maybe don't want to tell a, you know, you don't want to tell a girl on a first or second date.
I'd probably make the mistake of doing that, but you don't want to bring it up at Burning Man.
Well, maybe some people at Burning Man are really into that stuff.
Never been. I thought it was like this big like hippie festival.
I mean, it's basically just a city that they build from scratch, and you have all sorts of everyone there. Yeah, there's, you know, there is that kind of vibe where people are in the desert doing yoga, you know, eating mushrooms, LSD, and there's that kind of hippie counterculture vibe. But there's also, you know, Harvard lectures you could go to every day, and there's all sorts of stuff. Yeah, it's a all very right.
So you don't want to bring it up at Woodstock.
Yeah, maybe not there.
So like, you know, I treat, again, like a business, treat myself like a business. I give myself 3 days off a month, and I have a 6 day work week, Sunday through Friday.
Oh yeah. Tell us about Shabbat.
Well, yeah, I mean, Shabbat, let me finish this point and then,
okay.
Or do you want,
yeah, no, just, finish. I
give myself 3 days off where I can just do whatever I want. Like actually when we were traveling in Bethany Beach, those were off days for me. So I could like, I didn't have to do my meditation or the extra, you know, writing time and all these phone rules and stuff, just do whatever I want. And then I give myself 3 weeks off in the year, like a full week off. And then just like, you know, sometimes you go through the day, you know, you wake up late. Like what if you miss your own appointment for writing? You have to hold yourself accountable for that. So I have, again, like things you need to, you can do to kind of compensate for that lost time. So again, like push-ups is one. If you do like 300 push-ups, then you get like a free pass, right? If you meditate for, so you kind of set yourself like, if I meditate for 40 minutes, then I can use that to eliminate another activity. It doesn't really matter what you do. It's just like, it's like a carrot and stick formula for yourself, right? Like you give yourself, like for you, maybe it's like, well, if I can learn 100 words in Russian in the day, or then I can skip the, I can have hookah, something like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have this whole, like I actually create an arrow every time I fulfill these other accomplishments. And I can the arrow to like cross out other letters and stuff.
Oh, got it. Okay. No, that's very important. Carrot and sticks is like,
yeah,
they call that habit formation, habit breaking 101. And, you know, getting to the root of what motivates you and gets you, yeah, to stop doing harmful activities is so important. Because I read a book last year called Atomic Habits by a guy named James Clear, and he gets really into the science around this stuff. So I'd recommend anyone who's struggling with habits, either breaking bad habits or forming new habits, to read that book. A lot of the similar things you're talking about. It's called Atomic Habits.
Oh. I probably don't need, maybe I still have some vices, but I think I'm pretty good now.
Yeah. Yeah, you're already implementing a lot of the stuff he says to implement.
Yeah.
There's some really interesting science and research around habits. Also, the whole idea of compounding habits, that's one of the biggest themes in there. How when you do something, you know, daily or consistently, you know, it seems like you're not doing a whole lot, but you get exponential returns on those activities, just like you would putting your money in a Roth IRA. You're getting compound interest. And you're also getting compound negative interest on bad habits.
Totally, you know, yeah.
Like smoking or eating poorly, wasting money on,
yeah,
you know, stuff.
Hopefully
you don't.
You've read The Compound Effect by, I think his name's Darren Hardy or something. It's an incredible book.
Okay.
You listen to the audiobook. I think I recommended it to you once. But, yeah, The Compound
What's
effect.
It called? Compound, okay.
Compound Effect. Notes.
So people can, I'll put these in the show notes so people can link to them.
Just such good advice about everything you're saying about these, you know, positive or negative interests over time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want, we can segue that into language because it's sort of the same theme.
Do you want to mention the Shabbat thing at all?
Shabbat is, for those who are not so familiar, it's like, basically 24-hour part of the week from Friday night to Saturday night where you rest.
In the Jewish religion.
In the Jewish religion. Of course, anybody, you know, can implement this, but resting, it doesn't mean it means for modern Jews, like, you don't drive a car, you don't go to work, you basically use the day to eat, sleep, pray, hang out, read. It's like a day off, but it's a day off where you're not running errands and driving to the gym or something like that. It's like you're really resting. You're just taking it easy. So it really, like, I started keeping Shabbat when I was living in Israel because I stayed with some religious families for Shabbat, and I observed how they keep the holiday. And in America, we have, it's really not, unless you're in the Orthodox community, you don't really get exposed to like what Shabbat really is. So I never really knew what it actually, how it was really practiced. Like, I kind of thought it was just Friday night dinner and that was it. So I said, you know, I'll try to keep Shabbat. I feel like I spend way too much time on my phone, and I was getting more into meditation and kind of finding peace and these things. So I kept Shabbat, and like the benefit, I started doing it every week, and I continue to do it to this day. And just, yeah, the benefits of it were just unbelievable. The biggest takeaway for me was like, you have this, again, awareness of time and the separation between this one day of the week and the rest of the week. So, like, I think that Shabbat, aside from all the religious and holy value of it, there's very practical benefits, which is that it's kind of like, it allows you to create space for yourself to rest. And then during that time where you're not resting, it makes you more productive because your brain almost like switches into like, okay, I just had this day of rest. Now I have this time to be productive and to work. It also gets you off your phone for a day, which is like an incredible experience. It's really unbelievable to think that, you know, most of human history, there were no phones, and even most of our lives, we didn't have smartphones. And now to even go a day without it seems like unfathomable, right? I mean, it's pretty shocking. And 2 days without it, it's like, 2 days without it, it's like, how could that even exist? But this is like what life, this is what life is and was. This is what is natural.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a phone until I had a beeper. When I got my driver's license, my parents made me carry a beeper when I was like 16, 17, 18 in the end of high school. And then I didn't get a phone until my freshman year of college, but you know, smartphones didn't come around until I think I was towards the end of college. But you know, and I used to think like, what the hell did I used to do? Well, I used to play a lot of golf. Yeah. I used to, you know, I spent some time on the computer, but I was outside. I was playing, I was doing sports, I was getting exercise. It was like, you know, toilet papering people's houses, doing these things that like, and I look at, you know, someone like my little brother's age, Scotty, who's 22. He's had a smartphone since he was like in diapers. So
I don't think I'd be where I am today if I grew up using a phone, smartphone, because I wouldn't have developed my interest in music and literature. I would have been distracted.
I mean, there's obviously the pros and the cons. Like, some of these kids are fucking amazing, like gaming and making money. There's that whole industry, right? There's But hard to really say what the long-term impact will be. You know, 20, 30 years from now, it'll be like, we'll think back on this time as like, whoa, this is a, everyone were, who knows? But yeah, it's worth noting for sure. So aside from, like, it sounds like getting that day of rest. Yeah.
Another thing which is great about it is it takes you out of the autopilot of life, Shabbat, because you're removed from technology. You have to do things differently. So like, I'll just give you an example. Yesterday yesterday was a Jewish holiday, Sukkot. And you're also supposed to keep it like Shabbat, but I had to teach, so I had to work a bit. The university, but I said, you know, I'm not going to drive. Usually I drive from one campus to the other. And I said, you know, I'm going to respect the holiday. I'm not going to drive. And this would be the same idea for Shabbat. So I actually had to take a bus instead of driving from one campus to the other. And like, normally we're so an autopilot. We get out of work, we go to our car, we drive to where we're supposed to go. And we're just unaware of the rest of the world that these other possibilities. So just by taking this bus, like, I just got a better sense of how the camp, I got to see new parts of the campus I hadn't seen before. I saw that there's like a Starbucks right near where I teach. And every morning I'm like, oh, I wish to get a cup of coffee, you know? I never would have known it was there. And you get more exercise, like just walking. So Shabbat, it's the same way. Like, I'm sure
so you can take the bus, but you can't drive. And when you were in Kiev, there was that situation where we were coming back from a restaurant and I was like, yeah, let's take an Uber. And you're like, I can't take an Uber, but I can take the subway. And I'm like, what? What the fuck is that? How does that make any sense? And then you explain
I've gotten more relaxed about some of these rules. Yeah. But,
well, I mean, the way you explain it actually made sense, but it's like the subway's going anyways. So you're not invoking work to make it happen. Like, you're just getting on it. Whereas an Uber is not going anyways. You have to order it. You have to call it and, you know, pay for it. Obviously you have to pay for the subway too, but, you know, that's the distinction between work and not work, which I thought was cool.
It's almost like when you are keeping Shabbat, when you have a day without this technology, it's like you almost live in a new world. Mm-hmm. Like you would experience this in Kiev for sure. It would just be like a different Kiev, you know, that you'd never seen before. Even if it's the same place you live, but
is given the time frame of Friday night till Saturday late afternoon, because that's probably the time depending on if I have clients in town and we're going out, or, I mean, I'm super social, so I'm out most of the time on the weekends, and I'm doing a ton of shit on my phone, organizing parties and, you know, logistics for going out and this and that and the other.
Yeah.
So it'd be very difficult for me to not use my phone if I wanted to continue that social aspect of my life. But I mean, I guess in theory, since I'm not super religious.
Well, it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Right.
It doesn't have to be all or nothing. Like I said, yesterday I drove to work, but then when I got there, I took the bus. Driving is like, you know, you're really not supposed to do that because starting a fire with, you know, the car, you're kind of lighting a... Anyway, the point is...
And for non-Jewish people listening, they could... Is it similar to Sunday, you know, the Sabbath in Christianity?
Same idea, like...
Yeah.
But I think there is something nice... I mean, Sunday, first of all, everybody needs a day of rest. One day out of seven. You need a day where you're... First of all, I sleep so much just because I'm not using my phone. Because, like, when you're on your phone, on technology, it keeps you awake.
Yeah.
And just, like, if you just, like, read a book, like, you'll just fall asleep. But it's because your body needs to sleep. You need to rest. The phone and, like, the technology, lights are artificially keeping you awake. They're pushing your body. It's, like, terrible for your body. So everybody needs one day of seven where you just rest and got your body and your mind like reset. You know, other countries like Germany, they have the Sunday day of rest and they take it very seriously there. Most stores are closed. It's like a special day. I mean, they still use their phones. They still drive. Anything you can do to create space for yourself is incredible, whatever religion you are. But I do think there's something nice about the phone restriction. Like that to me is huge, you know?
Yeah.
Just like, I would recommend that, yeah. But I mean, look, if you just do it for half the time, even just for the evening, like anything is, you know, start small and you'll see. My first Shabbat, all I did was I just didn't check my email. I checked everything else and that felt like really hard, just not check my email. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to check it now after 24 hours. And point is, start small and you'll see the benefits and you'll want to do more.
I love it.
It's like getting over an addiction, really.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, totally. Yeah. I want to go into language stuff, but I want to do it justice. So let's save that for episode 2.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So... Yeah, I think we covered a lot, and we've been going over an hour. So,
great.
It's been awesome. I love this stuff. You should totally. And I'll talk to you about this more later. But there, you have enough here to like really create, you know, some sort of online content for this. Some sort of daily tips, email series, a little ebook or something. It could be a nice little side business. Because I think the stuff's super valuable, especially for people and entrepreneurs or, you know, people in my situation. So good
I'll
stuff.
I'll have to put it in my schedule.
Yeah.
Making time for that. No, really.
You need a new symbol for it.
No, there has to be, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it was my pleasure to share. You know, I like to teach, so.
So if anyone has any questions or they want to get in touch with you, is that possible?
Of course. Maybe just go, if you just do, I'm in the Rutgers University Department of German. My email is on there, steven.weinberg@rutgers.edu. But if you forget it, just Google Steve Weinberg, German, Rutgers, and it'll come up. And
I'll put a link below. Otherwise, so be easy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Otherwise, the best way, yeah.
Well, for awesome,
Instagram,
man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's your Instagram?
Steve Head 0001, 3 0s and a 1. Steve Head, like Radiohead. Oh, Steve. 3 0s and a 1.
Well, they won't be getting many stories. They won't be getting many stories, but.
when I'm in Russia, you'll get some.
All right, Sweet. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.